Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 159 of Her, the podcast where you'll hear the naked truth about her mind, her body, her life, and today, her relationships with men. You're going to love this podcast, and I've been looking forward to doing this interview for quite some time. We have a terrific show, but before we begin, just know this episode is made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Vitamins, the delicious once-a-day gummies that contain all of the essential vitamins, minerals, and omega oils customized just for women. To learn more, hop on over to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. And here's your reminder to click on iTunes after this episode to rate and review the show. We look forward to hearing from you and reviewing all of your feedback. I just sit here just waiting with bated breath. I do, I swear. So please make sure to rate and review. All right, it's time for Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind, her body, her life. It's all about Her.
You know, one of my favorite columns in the New York Times is something called Modern Love. And one day I was trolling around reading it. And I'm not kidding you when I tell you that there was this headline that just grabbed me. And it was all about sleeping with married men. I thought, how fascinating. What's that about? And then I read this fabulous piece written by Karen Jones. And it was so rich. It had so much content in it. I didn't even know where to begin. I immediately stalked her, hunted her down. And lo and behold, we're so happy to have Karen on the Her podcast to discuss what she wrote. Karen practiced medicine as a physician assistant for 18 years. She left medicine after moving to England, where she lived for 4 years. She writes the bi-monthly Savvy Love column for Erotic Review magazine and is working on a memoir about midlife sex and relationships. Karen, welcome to the Her podcast.
Hi. It's great to be here. It's a dubious honor, I have to say.
No, it's something that is just totally amazing, actually. And I really want to kind of just, I'm going to read a piece of what you wrote here. Very, very excellent writing, by the way. I'm not sure it's possible to justify my liaisons with married men, but what I learned from having them warrants discussion, not between the wives and me, though I would be interested to hear their side. No, this discussion should happen between wives and husbands annually, the way we inspect the tire tread on the family car to avoid accidents. And then you basically talked about while living in London, you dated married men for companionship while you process the grief of being newly divorced. I believe you were married for 23 years. And you began, there's this one piece that I remember you wrote. And that is what surprised me was that these husbands weren't looking to have more sex. They were looking to have any sex. Fascinating. All right. Now, let's hop right into it. What was going on with this whole thing? Why did you choose to sleep with married men when you were, you know, getting on to the Cupid app and the rest of them? A lot of single guys were, you know, responding to you. But then there was this married thing going on. What was going on?
Yeah. Well, part of it was just feeling temporarily adrift from leaving my marriage. And I had had a big romance and I had broken that off. And married men were approaching me often on these dating websites. So I didn't want to put anyone else in the position of liking me more than I liked them. So I started chatting with these married guys. And, you know, just my background as a clinician just made me really curious about why they were doing this. So I would always ask them, and I said this in the article, I always made sure that I felt comfortable. This man was not looking for a relationship. because I wasn't looking for one either. And I think we were good bets for each other just simply because we were lonely and we wanted some physical experience together.
Well, one of the things that you also noted in reading the article was that you also, you know, carried on a relationship. Here it is. All told, I communicated with maybe a dozen men during that time in my life and had sex with fewer than half. Others I texted or talked with, which sometimes felt nearly as intimate. What was that about, the texting and talking thing without really having anything else?
Well, it was me asking a lot of difficult questions and them being incredibly open with their answers. And, you know, I was criticized a lot after the piece came out about believing these men and their stories. You know, some people said they were lying to me. You know, if they're lying to their wives, they must be lying to me as well. Well, that could be the case, but I think that some of the relationships I had, even with the men that I didn't meet, they were genuine. They sounded like they were looking for somebody to confess to confess their the pain they were feeling within their marriages. And, you know, I was sympathetic. I was just listening. I think that's what the basic was. I wasn't judging. I was just listening.
And, you know, in reading this piece again, you know, it is interesting. You did put on your, you know, clinician's hat a lot as you were trying to understand what this is really all about. You know, there was something also about your gender and age. At 49, you wrote, I was just about there myself and terrified of losing my desire for sex. Men don't have this drastic change. So we have an imbalance, an elephant-sized problem, so burdensome and shameful we can scarcely muster the strength to talk about it. Maybe the reason some wives aren't having sex with their husbands is because as women age, we long for a different kind of sex. I know I did, which is what led me down this path of illicit encounters. After all, nearly as many women are initiating affairs as men. Wow. Okay. What kind of different relationship are you really, you know, addressing here? You said, you know, there's this need for something, a different kind of sex. What does that mean?
Well, so I was trying to understand, well, first of all, I'm a big fan of Esther Perel. I don't know if you've read her work, but
yes,
her most
yes.
recent book is called The State of Affairs. And that's really where I was able to see what she's uncovered as far as a woman's motivation for having an affair. And my own was very similar. It was illicit. It was exciting. It was free. There were no emotional commitments. There was no maintenance of any type of relationship. And I think as women, we do carry a huge burden when it comes to our careers and our families and trying to keep it all together. And this is very generalized, but I think when two people marry and they both have careers, I think women still take on the burden of the domestic front and the childcare and things like that. And so, you know, what Perel was saying is that women just want to step out of that realm of responsibility and do something really irresponsible. That's kind of how I was feeling. I had been that kind of caregiver in my own marriage. And when a woman hits menopause, and, you know, this is my very unscientific note, but I felt very uninterested in taking care of other people's problems anymore, which is part of the reason why I didn't want to go back to medicine. You know, I had enough energy to take care of my child, and that I needed that. But I think women, and I think men need to hear this a lot, is that when we lose that estrogen, we lose a lot of our ability to want to take care of everything. I think that's why a lot of marriages break up when women are in their 50s.
Is that what happened in your own marriage?
I think it definitely contributed. You know, it wasn't the only reason. There were many, many years of trying and difficult issues that we just couldn't surmount together.
All right. And so, again, it's interesting. You noticed sort of a backlash once the piece came out in the New York Times. What mm-hmm. were the highlights of that? Was any of that A, surprising, or B, did you learn something different? What was going on with that?
It was not surprising. Although I have to say, after having lived in England for 4 years, I was a little surprised at how vehement people's opinions were about just the fact of having the affair and how black and white wrong that was. And, you know, a lot of people who criticized me online just, you know, out and out said, I'm a terrible person. And I won't use the language that they use, the words that they called me. I took it all in. It didn't surprise me at all. What did surprise me was all the emails that I received from the New York Times forwarded to me. And those were, by and large, confessional, supportive. Thank you for bringing up this topic. This is what I've been living with for 20 years. I'm resigned to it. I'm having an affair. You know, all those kind of things. It was all over the place, but mostly people that just needed to tell me their story. So that was a nice contrast to all the hate that was going on Twitter and Facebook.
How fascinating. You know, I was thinking of my own reaction. I find myself, I spent the whole time fascinated, just fascinated. You know why? Because mm-hmm. no one ever talks about this. Well, no one ever talks about it. Mm-hmm. And everyone knows it happens. Dear God, just open up any newspaper and there's like another thing going on. And people all oftentimes pigeonhole, and it's sort of black and white. Mm-hmm. But as it turns out, you know, there are some other issues. Like you said that you met men who were married to women who'd become disabled and could no longer be sexual, but the husbands remained devoted to them. Go to that place for a minute. What mm-hmm. was that about?
Oh, I'll go to that place immediately. In fact, I just spoke to this man a couple of weeks ago, and he was someone that I saw about every 4 to 6 weeks. And his wife had a progressive motor neuron disease. And, you know, this had developed over the course of their marriage. And he adored her. He never had anything bad to say about her. And his outside relationship with me, I mean, it was just, say, an hour or two during the day. And, you know, I asked him, you know, like, it seems to me this is a clear situation where if she loves you as much as you love her, why not just ask her if it's okay? And he just felt like he couldn't do it. But funny enough, after the New York Times piece came out, I called him and he had read it. And he said he had the conversation with his wife as delicately as possible. And for him, he feels, and she actually was very non-defensive, which I think is incredibly generous of her. And she gave it a thought and said, okay, just, I don't want to know about it. I don't want things to change between us. And he didn't tell her that he had already been seeing other women, but he was incredibly relieved to have been given that kind of, you know, pseudo permission. And he said he feels even happier with her now as a partner. And he does, you know, all the housework, childcare. He works hard on the weekends to bring home some money. So, you know, there was something, he can't say that I was the impetus, or the article was the impetus. I think he just got to the point where he was seeing someone new and he just felt like he could do that.
I see. Okay. And, you know, again, there's all kinds of mix of emotions and, you know, response to that, as one can only imagine. But, you know, it's mm-hmm. fascinating. I was reading in the article, you were talking to someone and you said, what if you said to your wife, look, I love you and the kids, but I need sex in my life. Can I just have the occasional fling or a casual affair? He sighed. I don't want to hurt her. She's been out of the workforce for 10 years, raising our kids and trying to figure out what she wants to do with her life. If I asked her that kind of question, it would kill her. So you don't want to hurt her, but you lie to her instead. Personally, I'd rather know. Well, maybe I would rather know. My own marriage had not broken up over an affair, so I couldn't easily put myself in her position. It's clearly a lie if you don't confess the truth. It's kinder to say silent. Interesting. Your thoughts about that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's really hard for me. I think the article makes me sound like it is a black and white issue that you should be honest with your partner. And I think based on the feedback I've gotten, especially from emails, you know, I'm not taking a stance on that. I've had men say, look, I really don't want to bring up the issue. I think this is how it works best to not tell her. And, you know, I think everybody needs to be needs to make their own choice based on their own situation. And that's the thing, is that every situation is completely unique. It has to do with how you were raised, what you believe, your generation. You know, almost all the men who are telling me that they choose to not talk to their wives about it are older. They're in their 60s or older. I have had a couple people say, when I was got brave enough to bring up this this issue, and my partner was open enough, and I'm not saying that it's these all men. There are some women who are also experiencing the position of being the one who does not get sex. And the people that said they've opened up and their partners were open to hearing the story have felt like it's been transformative for them to talk about it. And they take these baby steps together. So, you know, even though the article made me come off as someone who said, you should be honest, you know, I can't say that for everybody. And I can say it for me, is that I would never want to be in a position where someone felt he needed to lie to me, or I felt I needed to lie to him.
Wow. You know, toward the end of the article, actually at the end, you're saying, I'm not saying the answer is non-monogamy, which can be rife with risk and unintended entanglements. I believe the answer is honesty and dialogue, no matter how frightening. Lack of sex in marriage is common, and it shouldn't lead to shame and silence. By the same token, an affair doesn't have to lead to the end of a marriage. What if an affair, or ideally, simply the urge to have one, can be the beginning of a necessary conversation about sex and intimacy? What these husbands couldn't do was have the difficult discussion with their wives that would force them to tackle the issues at the root of their cheating. They tried to convince me that they were being kind by keeping their affairs secret. They seem to have convinced themselves, but deception and lying are ultimately corrosive, not kind. In the end, I had to wonder if what these men couldn't face was something else altogether. Hearing why their wives no longer wanted to have sex with them. It's much easier, after all, to set up an account on Tinder. Tell me what your thoughts were when you wrote that.
That was like a knife, wasn't it? I just think that it's very, very shameful to have to ask your spouse or your partner why they don't desire you anymore. And it is so, so hard to be truthful as a spouse to confess why you don't desire that person anymore. And so the easiest thing to do is just ignore it. I've been in a situation where I wasn't getting the sex I wanted, and it took a toll on me because I figured as a woman, you know, my partner should want to have sex with me. And when that wasn't the case, it really messed up my perception of myself as a desirable person. So it is absolutely probably one of the scariest things you can ask somebody that you love. I've been emailing with one woman who discovered her husband's affair, and he's going all out to save the marriage and be good to her. But I don't think that she really spent much time. And she is now thinking about, you know, what was it? What did I miss? You know, was I just too tired? You know, do I not like him anymore? Does his body not turn me on anymore? You know, these are all issues that are really, really common in the domestic front, especially when kids are involved. And we just are exhausted. And, you know, things like Netflix are really, really easy. You know, it's way easier to watch, you know, Breaking Bad than it is to talk about why you won't sleep with me.
Yeah. And I think there's another aspect to this, too. You know, as a physician, and I work a lot with women's health, a lot of women, mm-hmm. as they're coming into the perimenopause and menopausal years, are going through a lot of physical and mental changes, none of which, you know, makes sense to them. You know, they've got everything from foggy brain to drooping breasts, to whatever the issue may be. Mm-hmm. And a lot of women have not been taking the appropriate care of themselves, because, of course, women are penultimate caregivers, so they're sort of deferring to everyone else's needs. Mm. And then one day they wake up, look in the mirror, and they go, oh, my God, you know, where was I when all this was taking place? Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, when you engage in something like an intimate relationship with someone, you want to feel good about yourself. You know, you enter that. You can't walk into it with guilt and shame and blame and, you know, self-deprecation. That's just not a going thing here for a healthy, intimate physical relationship. So I think a lot of women are sort of taken aback, and then they just avoid the whole issue of intimacy because it will bring home how bad they feel about themselves. And I've talked a lot of women through this. And one of the things I found is that when they start taking care of themselves, and this is borne out by very hardcore science, that if you really want to get a healthy libido, exercise, get on out there, engage, connect with other people, take good care of yourself. And this doesn't mean that overnight you turn into, you know, some kind of sexy model or something. No, it just means that in your mind, while you're taking good care of yourself, you feel better about yourself. And in doing so, are going to be more open to sharing that with someone you care about. So I just think that there's this whole, you know, issue that goes on specifically in that age group, especially. And, you know, I'm hearing a lot of complaints about, you know, men saying you're too overweight, you're too out of shape. And, you know, there's suddenly an imbalance, not just in hormones per se, but also in the trajectory of the journeys of each person. What if the guy's taking really good care of himself, the woman isn't? What if the woman's taking really good care of herself and the guy isn't? You know, it's just one of those things that's just sort of a reality. What is your thought about that, Karen?
Well, I wanted to know if you had read the book Come As You Are. And I'm very sorry, I'm blanking on the author's name. But it was one of the best books I read about the issue of not only flagging desire, but attitude towards one's own body. And a lot of the single guys that I dated when I was in London were so wonderful at, you know, being appreciative of my body. And this is absolutely not perfect. And one guy said to me, you know, I don't care, you know, what your body looks like. If you're smiling and you're enthusiastic for sex, you are gorgeous. And that is huge. And I think a lot of women or people in general think, you know, oh gosh, you know, my body doesn't look like the pages of the magazines. And now I feel bad about myself. And when you feel bad about yourself, yeah, you want to stay in your, you know, your flannel pajamas, and you don't want to be touched, and you don't want your middle-aged muffin top to be acknowledged even. but, you know, what the Come As You Are book says is like, look, you know what the secret of great sex is? It's a really healthy love for yourself and an acceptance of your body. And that in and of itself is worth tons of hours in the gym.
And thank you very much for saying that, because I think we're in a place of acceptance of who we are at any age. And it's clear we all know couples where no one's, you know, looking like they should grace the cover of any kind of, you know, crazy ass, you know, media magazine. And instead, you have two people who just glow. They glow from love of life and love of themselves and love of their relationship. And what you see there are two people who hold hands, hug, love in their own special way, whatever. And I just, those kind of stories are everywhere. I want to make sure everyone knows that we're talking to Karen Jones. That's K-A-R-I-N Jones. If you want to read more of her work, it's in eroticreviewmagazine.com/author/Karen, K-A-R-I-N Jones. And read more about what she, about her perspective in her bi-monthly Savvy Love column. And I understand you're also working on a memoir about midlife sex and relationships. Needless to say, as soon as that's published, we'll have you back on again. And if you want to take a look at that wonderful article I've been reading from, it's from the New York Times. And this is April 6th, 2018, Modern Love. Look under the Modern Love column in the New York Times, Sleeping with Married Men. And I just found this interview to be beyond fascinating. And Karen, I cannot thank you enough for coming on to the Her Radio podcast, where I know for a fact that our ladies out there have been listening, sitting at the edge of their chair, because this is really rich material. And it's something I think that should be slapped on the table and discussed more often. Thank you, Karen, for being on our podcast.
Well, thank you. I'm glad that you have also embraced us talking about this. Thank you very much.
Wonderful. Keep up your work and keep opening people's eyes to all of this. And everyone out there, you know, please take a minute right now and hit iTunes and rate and review this show. We are sitting here just waiting to hear from you. This was an eye popper. So make sure to rate and review by going to iTunes right now. I'm Dr. Pam Peek, host of This Her Podcast. Follow me on Facebook at Dr. Pam Peek or Twitter at Pam Peek MD. And remember to catch every episode of the Her Podcast on iTunes or Radio MD. Thanks for listening today, and stay well.